Hey there, listeners. Welcome to the Leadership is Changing podcast. My name is Dennis Chinoutsos, and I'm your host. And I had a great interview with a gentleman by the name of Roy Corlin. And Roy is a podcast coach. In fact, he runs five different podcasts himself, which is amazing. And he shares a whole lot of stuff about his background and what he covered off. And we had a really interesting conversation. In fact, the title here is called What You Think You Attract. And that interesting conversation, Roy shared about his background and what he has experienced, but how he's also bounced forward or bounced back into things and done very well in business. Because you see, we talked also about leaders being overwhelmed. But the thing is, how do you handle that? And then what are you grateful for? So listeners, great interview. Sit back and enjoy.
Welcome to Leadership is Changing. Each week, we and our guests provide information and insights through exploring leading change. This is taking your leadership to another level by finding the balance between executive excellence and personal well-being through stories that inspire real change. It's time to adapt in our fast-moving world when leadership is changing with your host, Dennis Giannoutsos.
Hey there, listeners. Welcome to another wonderful episode on the Leadership is Changing podcast. Great to have you here with us again today. I've got a wonderful guest with me. His name is Roy Corlin. Roy, a massive welcome to you.
Thank you very much. Thank you for having me on the show, Dennis.
Excellent. Now, Roy, you are where in the world today?
So I'm living in a place called Łódź in Poland. So it's the third city. It used to be the second, right in the center of Poland, but I'm originally from Cork in Ireland.
In Ireland. You're originally from Ireland. Yeah, we can tell from your accent. Yeah. Yeah, much so. Hey, Roy, the other thing I was going to ask you was, and I asked a lot of people this as well, I've given the audience a little bit of a background to you on the sort of like an opening I've done, a pre-recording, but tell us more about your background.
I was kind of, I suppose, always entrepreneurial. I'm like from 9, I was going around washing cars, delivering leaflets. At 11, I basically was doing newspapers. So the vendor brought the papers to me, a famous guy, actually. He used to be on the TV and everything. And I delivered the newspapers all around. And I learned a lot of lessons from him. He was a very nice man. I did that for even up to college. But with the money from that, at 14, bought a lawnmower and then went around cutting grass when I was 18, buying and selling motorbikes. So always kind of entrepreneurial, always doing stuff like that. Studied construction economics and management, and then later did a diploma in applied project management. First job was in for a large, the biggest now mechanical contractor. I worked on a site in Limerick. It was for Johnson & Johnson. So it was a greenfield site making disposable contact lenses, and we were doing the mechanical. Started off kind of doing CAD technician, just drawing. And then the next job, I just got promoted. I was running a £1 million job, the next job, and eventually became like contract manager, running about 10 jobs, some of the jobs, like €10 million. And after that, then went to another company. I was something like 8.5 years with them. Then went to another company as a regional manager. Same thing, they were mechanical and electrical. And I started seeing an investment in Poland because I had met a Polish girl. And when I was visiting the parents, I said, oh, property's cheaper. So I started buying a few properties. Eventually set up a company to buy property for foreign investors. And so I was still working for that company. And I was kind of, I went down to 3 days a week. And I was coming out 1 week a month. Relationship broke. So she was based in Poland. I was in Ireland. So I thought, this is okay. This is going to work. Got a lot of syndicates together. Sold a lot of properties. And what happened is, because people not only wanted to buy a property, but they wanted to renovate it. Oh, we can do that. We want it rented. We can do that. We want it managed. We can do that. So a big company kind of became of it. And what happened is the person that I had been in business with sent an email to all the investors saying they'd set up their own company and that they could basically look after everything themselves. And I would have lost everything because I'd reinvested. You know, I'd released equity in my Irish properties and bought into a few things like a commercial, a site to build big apartments and everything. And I would have lost everything. So I moved out, not planning to move out, but in the end, she got one client out of more than 50. But it ended up being a big business because I had about 14 people on my books at one stage, because just managing so many properties, all the different syndicates, and it was all going very well. And when the crash happened in the States, it took a while to go across the pond. I was doing well. I was doing very well. But the investors that I'd got in, so some of the investors were worth a lot of money. You know, I was like the small boy. I was the small fish with these big groups. And I said, this is it. They got into trouble. They weren't able to pay. You know, sometimes we had a commercial, and because interest rates had gone up and we had borrowed like 80%, you know, sometimes we had to pay excess money. But on a short term, like 15 years was the loan we took. And I just put in extra money thinking I'll come right. And I said, look, I'll just increase my share at the end of the year, look, or just pay me 10% interest a year. I was being fair with them, and they never got it right. And eventually I kind of said, oh, I'm running out of money here. So I went to the banks. I said, hey, can you give me interest only? And the problem was I had interest only investments in Ireland, and they turned off that tap. They said, no, it's repayments. They wouldn't give me. So I went from having cash positive to negative straight away. And with the stuff in Poland, like they were like, oh, yeah, they told me the right story. But the minute a payment missed, they had to bail us in straight away. And what happened is none of the solicitors or accountants told me when you go into bankruptcy or a company loses. Normally, you kind of lessons learned. Okay, I've lost my money. Let's move on. When you're the president in Ireland, and I was the president of a lot of companies, you're personally liable. So instead of making about 5 million euro, I was personally liable for 5 million euro. And everybody just kind of ran for the hills and left me. Nobody was there to help me. Like, it was kind of, this is your baby. And through that, I saw bailiffs being corrupt, banks being corrupt, just the whole system. Everybody, like, for example, bailiffs were working with a valuer on a commercial property that we had. I thought in US dollar returns, because most people can kind of understand that. It was worth about 1.25 million. They valued it at 500,000. They said, they're basically, the valuation was saying, what a terrible property. I've never in my life seen a valuation doing something like that. Never in my life. And what happens is at the auction, it's 75% for the first auction and 50% for the second. They do a screenshot so they can prove, hey, this was advertised, but it's not really. They put it up, take it down, so nobody sees it. Nobody turns up. So the first auction would have been at 1.5 million. The next auction, they were actually going to be selling it at 1 million. And thankfully, somebody I knew went in and bought it. I didn't make a penny out of it, but what they'd done is they took the debt away from me because the way that it was structured. Another one, we had houses and they bribed people in the room. The bailiffs, I don't know who, they had their cronies buying, but they basically paid people off in the room not to bid on the properties. And like, the problem is you're personally liable for these things. And that's going on around the world. I thought this was a Polish thing, and then I saw it happening in the UK, in Ireland, in the States. So I'm assuming this happens everywhere. And just kind of through that, then went to an event, a Mind Valley event. It was like, what's your quest? And I was like, I need to expose this because I saw so many people thrown in the towel. And I mean, like, you know, with the leadership and everything, a lot of people, they set up their own businesses and everything. It's kind of hard. Some people, you know, we're all optimistic. So I think as an entrepreneur, we're optimistic in the sales and everything. But then reality kicks in and you don't know what you're going to experience with financial issues and everything. So I wanted to expose this and show what can be done. And at the same event, there was brilliant public speakers, and I hated public speaking. Even when I was working for the company in Ireland, when it was time for the meeting, you'd have the top guy from Johnson & Johnson, architects, builders, my voice went. I couldn't sleep the night before. I was very confident at my job. Procurement, I was beating the people that their jobs were procurement. I was like getting fantastic deals. But the one thing that I wasn't good at, and I kind of told myself a story, hey, you're not good at this. So for example, I tell you how shy I was when I was younger, going to the shop. I wouldn't go into the shop. I'd give my friend the money. When I was 18, I wouldn't go up to the bar. When it was my round, I'd give my friend the money to go up and call the round. That was like the serious shyness that I had. And I said, if I need to get my message out, I need to be able to talk in public. So when I came back, joined the Toastmasters meeting. But I'll even tell you how bad I was. I went to the meeting. I had to bring friends, of course, to hold my hands. They said, oh, this is great. And I knew this was perfect for me. And what happened is they said, we don't have time. And I was too shy to go back again. And the only reason I joined the Toastmasters is a new club was open a few months later. And I said, okay, everyone's going to be new. I just went there and they signed me up that day. Will you do a speech next week? Yeah, grand. And from then on, I just went, there's no saying no. So just constantly took roles. Then I joined the other club that I had been afraid for. Formed my own club, International Entrepreneurs Club, became a coach of a club and just entered loads of competitions, got into the final of 5 countries, did open mic TEDx, did open comedy, and became a DTM, Distinguished Toastmaster, within 3 years. So it went from one extreme to the other. And
what I say that is because even in leadership, we all have some sort of skill. We say, I'm not good at that. And it's like, don't be telling yourself a story when the reality is we can change anything. And if we need to, we can. And that's why, yeah.
Now that's awesome. What a story. Wow. Based on the story you just shared, I also see from your resume that you went into podcasting. So for somebody who didn't really want to speak in that, but then you've got into podcasting and you've got into it in a big way because you are now a podcast coach. Tell us a little bit more about that.
So I went to another event and there was kind of people in the evening or the weekend kind of creating their own thing free. And one guy had like start a podcast, like a workshop. And I was like, okay, I checked that out because I used to listen to podcasts. Never even thought I'd done one. And I said, I can do this. And my main thing always was about exposing the fraud and corruption. But I knew I'd be attacked for that. I need to learn my skill set first. So I said, okay, because of my public speaking experience, I set up the speaking podcast first. So that was one with people, speakers all over the world and just tips for coaches and consultants and everything. And what's strange, I mean, it's got over 250 episodes. You would think that after, say, maybe 50, you'd learn enough and that's it. Nearly every single person brings something different to the table and I'm just constantly learning it. I've kind of pivoted it a bit now that I bring on authors and stuff like that. Just interesting stories. But that was kind of the one. And I mean, that's done very well. It got to the top 0.5%. The next one was the meditation one. And when I lost everything, meditation helped me. So I started listening to a kind of guided meditation. And I suppose how this will help with kind of the leadership listeners is sometimes people, they get so stressed with what's going on. Because I know that even when I was working in Ireland, you know, I was doing well. They throw the next job on you. They throw the next job on you. They keep throwing stuff on you because you're doing 10 times better than most people. And in the end, it catches up on you. You know, so I think with me, I was very stressed because I lost my houses and I lost everything. The whole lot fell apart. And they even took my personal house with my belongings in Ireland as well. The whole lot was unfortunately didn't get information on how much it was sold for, when it was being sold or anything. So the meditation was kind of a guided meditation. One, gratitude. And it's like what you're grateful for. And I think it's very important what things you love in life, even if they're small, getting a cuddle from your child, just holding hands with a loved one, whatever it is, nice meal, because what you think of you attract, instead of looking at the negative and you get worried about, oh, I don't have this, lack of this, because if you start thinking of the lack, you start attracting the lack. So the best thing is thinking a positive mindset. And the next one is the act of forgiveness. And I suppose how this could kind of relate to everybody is, well, even if they're working in a corporation or whatever, there's always somebody that you don't like. I mean, I talk to people all the time that are working in a corporation, and the amount of people that complain about their bosses or the people they work with is just, I think everyone can relate to that. And it's a kind of act, it's forgiveness. So if you're able to forgive, you're not holding the pain within you, because they're not thinking of you, you're thinking of them, and you're actually making angry. And then the people surrounding you are actually living in that environment. So for me, I was able to forgive, just think about, okay, forgive. But there was some a lot harder. There was like big ones for me. And what I did is I actually brought the person back to the child. We have unconditional love for a child. So when you look at a child, you just kind of go, oh, you know, it's just beauty and love. And you just, and I said, that person was like that, and external circumstances changed them and made them who they were. So whether it was abusive parents, alcoholic parents, or even sometimes the parents are working so hard that they're leaving the child at home on their own and they're hanging around with the wrong people, and they're so exhausted from trying to give their kids the best thing, the child goes down the wrong road and it's very hard to kind of get them back. So when you look at it in that kind of sense, you start forgiving everybody. But what happened is, I think it actually, it was a weight that lifted off me by doing that. And I think it's an important. So then the next podcast, and just on that, is the ones I was listening to, one disappeared and the other became paid. When you're watching every penny, you don't want to be paying for things like that. So I said, I want to create a podcast that's always free. And I've got from 1 minute meditations to 2 hours, because sometimes people say, I don't have time to meditate. You do on my one. And then I have a lot of discussions as well, talking about, you know, yoga, chakras, all different things, breath work, just so people kind of understand what's going on. So that's in the top 0.5% as well. The next one was the Polish one.
Sorry, Roy, what was the name of the meditation podcast?
It's Meditation Podcast.
Okay, cool. So simple name. So,
and that's something for anybody that's actually thinking of a podcast, is I make sure that the podcast actually does what it says on the tin.
And I think, is it a reason why like four have got to the top 5%? Perhaps, because when people are doing a search, the name kind of helps. So that's why I've done it. So the next one was a Polish one, and that kind of goes down to education. So I was, since I moved to Poland, I've been constantly trying to improve my language. I'm not great at languages, because even in Ireland, we did Irish from the age of 4 to 17. And I couldn't have a conversation with you in Irish. It's embarrassing, but the majority of people can't. It's just kind of, it's rammed down your throat. I could tell you a prayer, which is of no benefit to me. I could say a prayer in Irish. But if you ask me halfway through, what did that word mean? I don't know. So that's, it was just taught wrong. So I thought, okay, I listened to, I was doing Rosetta Stone, Pimsleur, a few other things, and doing courses to learn the language. Even at one stage, when I was running all these projects, I had somebody come to the house to teach me. And because I was so exhausted, I fell asleep a few times. So what they did is they actually got me to juggle tennis balls and walk around as they were teaching me. And that actually helped. That kind of, it's like, it was just strange. The mind started working. A few years later, then I said, I want to learn from a podcast. And the only ones I could find were scripted, or they were only in Polish. I said, I can't learn like that. So my ex-wife, who actually was a later teacher that I got, I said, and I have a child, beautiful child with her, I said, can we create a podcast and do it the way I like? And what I'm doing is 5 to 10 minutes showing a graphic. So if you go to the mechanic, the different things you need. If you're going to a dentist, filling, drill, that kind of, and we've 460 or something episodes. And the beauty is, it's like, it's been number one in a load of countries. And what I tell people is, when I did it first, I was doing it for me, really, to be honest with you. I just took a really crappy picture of me and her and a crappy logo, and it got to number one ahead of Duolingo, ahead of BBC Languages, and ahead of a load of them. And so I tell people, and make sure if you're doing something, try to have a good logo. But like, it's 900, over 900,000 on the audio alone. Wow. And between the videos, it's over 2 million. And every day it's in about 20 different countries. So you have an Irish guy teaching people Polish. And I still enjoy it. And I've even started bringing my son into it now as well, that I said, maybe I can tap into the children market. So I do one, and it's working. It's gone up a lot. So I just thought, and he's enjoying it. You know, and we're just doing like 5 minutes. So that was the next one. The fourth was The Awakening. So that was the kind of the one I've always wanted to do. Exposing fraud and corruption, but with solutions. It's like, I didn't want it that, because there's so many, there's shows out there that are kind of telling you about the doom and gloom. We've enough with that with the news. We don't want to be hearing that. And for some reason, you're listening on the radio, every hour they have to depress you. Like, you're enjoying yourself listening to lovely music, and then on the hour they have to kind of, you know, bombard you with 5 minutes of negativity. So I didn't want it like that. I wanted to keep it kind of upbeat, but let people know what's going on, but then try to find solutions as well. And I mean, I've had a lot of famous, I've had Mickey Willis, he's the guy that did the Plandemic documentary. I've had Dr. Peter McCullough and a lot of famous people on it. And yeah, it's doing well. And like, I try to look at a lot of health things as well, you know, like gut health, digestion, because the whole lot are connected, because sometimes the stress that people are, they bring it into themselves and they get an ailment from it. So, you know, they're kind of connected.
Yeah.
The next one was the crypto. And I saw so much fraud going on with the crypto, you know, rug pulls, all these scams. And I didn't want to incorporate it into The Awakening, because I said I would hurt the people that aren't into blockchain technology. They just disappeared. They're like, I don't want to hear this. So I created the Crypto Podcast. And basically, it's the same thing. I mean, it got to the top 1% already. And I'm just kind of making it that your mother would kind of understand that kind of thing. That's making it simple. Because when I started hearing about Bitcoin, it was like 2014. A guy was trying to transfer money to me when I went to an event. He was actually one of the first in Poland doing the machines. And he was talking about wallets and everything. I just didn't get it. I said, no, thanks. And it was like, you know, shame on me for not understanding it. But I read a few books and I was like, they were so bad. And then I met the father of Ethereum, and he was talking about that. And I just, same thing, didn't get it. So I'm doing it in such a way that I'm kind of explaining it that people will understand. But I'm also kind of showing the things that can go on with the NFTs and why there's all this different corruption and what's good and bad about regulation. And it's not just newbies that, but there's experienced crypto guys coming in. And I think it's just the way that I ask the questions. They're kind of going, I didn't know that. And the latest one is the Podfather, and it was basically from one of my clients because I got him on so many shows. He christened me the Podfather, and I was like, I like that. And I thought, I love people continuing to podcast because I think, especially over the last few years, majority of people know that the news is all, you know, five corporations own 90% of the media. It's all regurgitated lies. And yep. I want people to stay in the game with the podcasting because there's a lot thrown to talk. I don't want them to do it. So I do like 2-5 minutes where I'm giving tips. And also I'm asking people that they can share their tips. So I'm trying to help them get, you know, my audience going to them, sharing it on my social media. But it's like different things on a green screen, on say one, I did one on like Facebook, because with Facebook, there's so much advertisements, sponsorship, you don't see nothing. And there's a way of actually removing that. And then you just see the threads that you want to see and just things like that. So I'm wanting, I think every podcaster's got something that they can share. And I want that to be part of the Podfather.
Do you know, there seems to be a common theme coming through everything you've just said there. And that is, was actually two. One is, if you're wanting to learn something, in other words, you being Roy, you start a podcast and then you start to learn a lot from either the guests or just talking about it. That's number one. And number two, you're teaching the audience as well. So it's all about learning. And that seems to be the common theme that's coming through all the different podcasts that you've launched, which is amazing to hear. And seeing what you do. And tell me, this podcast, it's the title is Leadership is Changing. When I mention that title, that statement, what does it mean for Roy?
I actually saw a post this morning where they were looking for master's degree and £15 an hour, dollars an hour. So I think sometimes the leadership is kind of the type of jobs they're putting out in the corporations and not respecting people. And I think the next generation, some of them are more ethical. They're not loyal to the dollar. They're more kind of caring about what's going on in the world, which I like to see. And with the meditation, like there's a load of people that come on and I said, this would be brilliant if it's brought into corporations. And they're saying they're doing it. And my kind of idea is that we know there's a lot of evil at the high level with a few of the companies. I don't want to name any of the companies, but we know that it exists. And if you go down deep down rabbit holes, you know who's connected to who. But if they're bringing in people that are helping them to do breath work, meditation, and calmness, middle management eventually get up the ranks. And I think we'll see a big change in that. And it like you even see some of the companies, you know, there's some companies coming out there. And they're not going down the bad road. They're like making sure they're looking after people. And at the end of the day, the consumer is conscious of that. And they're making the decision. Before it was like everybody's kind of got whatever's the cheapest. But there's times when someone's exposing something that you say, I will never buy that product again. That's the way I do it. I mean, the minute I learn something, I go, yeah, done with that. I will never go there. And I think in the leadership, the way it's happening, I think slowly, more thoughtful, caring, humanity-based leaders will actually be in charge.
Yep, cool. That's good to hear. And I also think the other thing you were saying before and just now as well is about the meditation side. I think it's really important because leaders are needing to take time out to think, meditate, calm down, breathe, because they forget to breathe. And doing so is really going to help them put them in a great space for them to be able to go and lead and take the organizations forward because they're going to be a lot clearer in their thinking and what they're doing, which is brilliant to hear. So yeah, I'm really glad you did that podcast. And I think, you know, people should go and listen to it, which is really good. Roy, tell me, did you ever have a leader that you sort of really was one of your favorite leaders when you were sort of growing as an individual, as an entrepreneur in that? Was there someone you followed? Now that could person that could be alive or history. Is there a favorite leader that you have?
Well, I mean, I've had some people in the boss sense, but honestly, anyone I go back to how my life is what it is, it's my mother. And I mean, if you could say she was the leader of the household, because I grew up in a rough neighborhood. I mean, I'm talking about a place where they used to be robbing cars and burning cars and fights every day. I mean, a fight nearly every day of my life. You know, it was just one of these things. And she made sure that we didn't go to the local school. She brought me like 40 minutes away. We didn't have a car, so we were walking, or when they had the money, we got the bus. And even hanging around with people, she would say, no, don't be hanging around with that person, don't be hanging around. And there was people like became alcoholics, ended up in jail. One died of, unfortunately, of drugs. And she made sure I stayed away from these people. And even as an entrepreneur setting up businesses, There's times I'd get into business with someone and her own intuition, she go, nah, I don't trust them. And I go, I know this person for 5 years. She goes, I'm just telling you, she's never been wrong. So as far as leaders go, she's my ninja.
That's great. And I think having that intuition of understanding and actually listening to the gut or understanding where things are at, sounds like she was really tuned in and really knew what she was talking about, which is brilliant. Yeah, very cool. And the other thing I was going to ask you is, and I think you've already alluded to it already, I don't know about you, but even in the podcast industry, we're finding it, even in construction, property, right through to crypto, the whole lot, life seems to be getting faster, whether it be technology, social, data, business, the whole lot. What do you reckon leaders should be thinking about or doing to help them be successful in that fast-paced, ever-changing world?
I think what they need to do is, one, be present what they're doing. Because I've seen so many times over the years that the guy is in work thinking of his family, feeling guilty. When he's at home, he's with his family and he's thinking of his job. So the most important thing is to be present where you are. So when you're at home, you're giving your kids time, your loved ones time, and that you're not kind of, you know, having the phone out and everything. You can start using AI tools because there's plenty of tools now that will take a lot of work, but don't be relying on it. And what I say is, they say, for example, when people do a Google search, their belief system thinks because Google said this, that's true. And it's the same with AI. And I have seen AI lie a lot of times. I've even seen one podcaster actually ask something and when he went back, it said it made it up. And people think just because AI said it, they regurgitate it and it's true. And all I say is reframe your question as well. Ask the opposite. And look at both sides of the fence because you'll see a totally different answer. And you can use the AI to make your life better. And what I would say is we think most people work so hard thinking for, yeah, when I do this, I'll have the £1 million house. I'll have the decent car. I'll have this. We'll be able to go on a lot of holidays. And your children are just sitting on the sidelines looking at you and they don't know who you are. And you'll have so much better in life because not one person on their deathbed had said, oh, I'm glad I did that. They always, always say about not spending time with friends and family. So I make sure I'm constantly connecting with my friends when I'm with my son. And it's like I do things with him and he doesn't see me. Like, and even if you're full day, you go, all right, let's do 2 hours, play games or whatever. Okay, you do your thing, I do my thing. Have that as well, you know, because sometimes you can kind of get tired when you have the kids too long around you, but have a bit of breathing space. But I think the most important thing is whatever you're doing, be present and don't be kind of working and having your phone next to you because so many people, they're busy, but they're busy fools. Like whatever way you structure yourself, because a lot of people, they make the list. I kind of do that as well. Sometimes I do the list and then, but I put a dollar mark next to it. Am I doing the most important things? And there's others, they get overwhelmed with their list because their list gets so big. So what I encourage them to do is have a blank piece of paper and start writing what you've actually just done. And then you start getting excited because you're going, whoa, I'm getting a lot done today. Because most of the time, if it's not on your list, you just kind of next one. And you end up just it becoming tasks. So try to focus on the most important things. Some people say, eat that frog. It's kind of get the hard thing out of the way. The most important thing that's going to actually make a change. And let the other things come later. Because most people, unfortunately, they end up kind of procrastinating about the big one. They'll do 50 things that, I had a busy day today. But, you know, are you a busy fool or are you productive? So try to have that talk with yourself. Don't be fooling yourself.
I like how you just said that. So take a blank piece of paper. And maybe the heading is completed today list. And it's the things that you're completing, which is really cool to see it actually coming and growing. Rather than that to-do list, as you see, because it just keeps growing, but we never sort of get to it, which is interesting. One more question for you, and that is, where do you see leadership being in 5 years? If you got your crystal ball out and start to think about the future, where do you see it going?
Like my crystal ball, I'd hit a few leaders over the head. I think I'm just hoping that, because I even see it with my son, like. Mm-hmm. He's caring about so many people and he's in the present moment and I'm making sure that that's not taken away from him. And I think there's more people kind of doing homeschooling and everything. And I know we're going back a kind of generation for this, but as they're coming through, you've got a total different mindset. So we kind of touched on it, you know, previously, but this is a layer even back again. I think a lot of the kids that when the parents are conscious that the whole education system has been corrupt and a lot of the times they're pushing people to go down the compliant route You don't need to be teaching your children 8 hours a day. 2 hours is plenty enough. And you'd be surprised how they'll take it on board. And when they know that they're learning something and the reason for it. So, for example, like, you know, I wasn't a teacher or whatever, and like I was even bad in English, but my son is getting top marks because he understands. And like I do simple things where I'm putting on the television in English. If we like watching The Simpsons, we watch The Simpsons in English, and he loves English now. And then at one stage, there was something on the text that came up and he didn't understand it. And I said, I wasn't teaching him how to actually read properly. And I ended up getting 50 books. So we had a competition. I read 100 books a year. I said, okay, let's read 100 books. And he did. So it was like, but we made it fun and that he could write it. So when I look at him, and as I see his friends as well, similar, when you look at that, I could never see my son actually humiliating somebody or treating him like crap in leadership. And even just, I mean, I've hired a load of people when I was working for the other company and even for my own companies. And even if I had to kind of fire somebody fast, if I knew they were doing something that I never humiliated them, I might say, hey, give me the phone and everything. And I tell them why. But I always respected them, that I know they need to put a roof over their head and put food. Whereas I know a lot of leaders don't do that. They just give a person a box, get out, and they don't. They can never get a referral and everything. I always kind of look, this position didn't work out. I take responsibility as well. Maybe I actually hired the wrong person. I didn't give them, I always try to train them. Some people are kind of, you can't train them. But I always don't ever disrespect somebody in such a way that you make them that they're dirt, because the reality is you don't want them having that over their head. Respect everybody. And I think by doing that, the world becomes better.
Excellent. Yeah, very good. Hey, it's been fascinating talking to you about this and about your background and leadership and so forth. If our listeners are wanting to get hold of you, Roy, where do they go?
Well, they'll find me on most social media with my name, Roy Collin, but all my podcasts and everything I do, bio.link/podcaster.
Excellent. That's great. Well, once again, thank you so much for joining me. It's been a real pleasure talking to you.
Thank you very much, Dennis. Really appreciate it. And what I was saying to your leadership listeners, make sure you give Dennis a 5-star rating and a review, because you mightn't think it makes a difference, but it does. And when the algorithms work as well, if it's posted on different social media, it'll push it up. So make sure you do that. It helps him a lot.
Awesome. Thank you for saying that, Roy. There you go, listeners. Well, think about it. You know, what you think is what you're going to attract. And also, what are you grateful for every morning, every day? What are you grateful for? Think about that as well. But you know what? If you can connect with people, connect with family, that's a really important thing for us to do as listeners, and be present with people all the time. Hey, thanks for joining us. Until next time, bye for now.
Thank you for listening to this episode of Leadership is Changing with your host, Dennis Giannoutsos. Each week, we and our guests provide information and insights through exploring leading change, inspiring executives and leaders to adapt and lead a bigger game in a fast-moving world.